True. One of the stronger constituencies inside the GNSO is the non-commercial constituency, and they are here today to try to present themselves. Good luck, Farsi.
Thank you very much, Jill. Hi, everyone. My name is Farzan Abadi. I'm the chair of Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. And we really appreciate these meetings with GAC to tell you more about us and what we do within ICANN. The Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group is the only non-commercial group at the generic name supporting organization. And we protect and advance the interests of non-commercial domain name registrants. We comprise of various civil society organizations, academics, and non-commercial individuals. Our members are actively engaged in protecting civil rights and digital rights. And they are from various countries. We have members from over 120 countries. And some of the organizations that are members, as an example, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, there is the Access Now, Article 19, Association for Progressive Communication. We are very influential and effective in policy making at GNSO. We get involved with various policy processes, and we try to infuse our values in these processes. But let me tell you a little bit about what are our values and how some of them converge with the government's values. We are here to protect the freedom of expression at ICANN. And we are here to see fair processes in place. We also care about privacy protection of domain name registrants in HUIS. And we think that the governments also are therefore protecting the same values. With that introduction, I'm going to ask if we could ask, well, first of all, if you have any questions or would like to discuss something. If not, then we can go to Stephanie first, perhaps, about privacy. If Stephanie could go, because privacy could take longer. Yeah? Okay, so if there are no questions, we can just immediately go. Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much. My name is Stephanie Perrin. I've been volunteering in ICANN in the NCSG for the last 5 years. Probably it might be useful to point out that I did have a 30-year career in the Canadian government working mostly in privacy, starting in, bless me, 1984, good year for privacy. So I'm quite familiar with the government concerns and the tensions between privacy and law enforcement. It's our view in the NCSG that the GDPR is bringing action that has been a long time coming, and that, in fact, there's nothing really new in the GDPR that wasn't in the European directive, except the 4% fines. And that is what is motivating, of course, this frenzied activity. We are, if I could just pick one item that we are concerned about and that perhaps we might find common ground with the GAC, it is the accreditation system. Some of us in NCSG are working on the notion of ISO standards for accreditation so that in the groups, it's a well-known problem in data protection circles, getting access to ISP information, getting access to telco information, and now once the WHOIS is shielded, and even now, in the context of privacy proxy shielded registrant information, there's a need to know who you're giving the data to. Now there will be liability for the registrars and registries when they give that data to them. So it's really important that there be an accreditation system that facilitates, through the use of the RDAP protocol, a narrow search, that facilitates law enforcement's needs for anonymous search in certain circumstances, and also respects the constitutional right for eventual disclosure in countries where that constitutional right exists. And anyone who participates at the Council of Europe is well aware that at the Council of Europe Cybercrime Budapest discussions in the working group, that tension has been part of those discussions for 20 years, right? So this is a well-known problem as well. Nevertheless, an ISO standard for receiving data, for recipients of data, would detail the requirements, who they are, the limited access within the organization, because we do not believe in an all-you-can-eat layered access where you get down to one layer and then everybody in your company can access everything in that layer. That's not what we mean by tiered access. But in this instance, it would facilitate a targeted response. There would be prescriptions for how you manage data, just like we have in government. You know, in government, we have many countries that have data protection law have lists of accredited law enforcement agencies that are able to get free access to data. The GAC, of course, will know best who those law enforcement agencies are, and that may be a function that we think the GAC should do. But I think in accrediting all of the private sector members, we think that's a multi-stakeholder operation, and we would like to contribute this concept of the standards. That's not a quick fix that will be done by May, but it is a better fix, and I don't think we should come up with stopgap measures just because this has been left on the table as an issue for these many years. I was part of the experts working group that looked at RDS, and you know, we knew there were going to be accreditation issues back in 2013, and the RDAP protocol was certainly being worked on throughout that period. So it's regrettable that we haven't made more progress, but that doesn't mean we can't start now. So I think, is that enough from me in terms of a contribution here?
If we could talk a little bit about NCSG position on the Model 3 and what we think with that regard.
Sure. we're very grateful to ICANN for providing the analysis of the legal positions. Sadly, we were all getting on planes by the time we got it. We have issued about a four-page statement, I guess a little longer than that now, on our position, our preliminary reaction to the material that has come. As I say, tiered access is quite a huge chunk of our concern. The other issues that we would like to point out, number one, because we won't get a proper tiered access system in time, I think it might be easier for law enforcement, because law enforcement agencies that access data right now, and the reality is they want the financial data from the registrars, so they're fairly well known. That could be brought together fairly quickly to facilitate not interfering with law enforcement, but the other efforts are going to take a while. In the meantime, that can't be public. It has to be protected. So the door number three, it would be the model we would have picked in the simpler version. What else in that vast tome of comments do we have that I should focus on?
The purpose,
yes.
And the legitimate interest of the groups that should be legally grounded.
Okay, how much time have I got?
You've got
purpose has been a big, I think that would be the one we need to talk about the most. I participate in the RDS, as does Kathy here. There has been an effort in the RDS group to try to expand purpose to include public interest. We don't even really define public interest at ICANN well. So the notion that anything can fit under public interest is not consistent with the way data protection law looks at public interest. That is a narrow provision for instance, releasing the names of people missing after a tsunami. That's what public interest means. It's in the public interest of releasing data in that. It's not a plank that you can use to release everything. So there is a great deal of tension in the RDS group between those of us who take that view, which I think is fact, and those who wish to sort of fit every possible use case that is ever developed through that door. Now, the other problem that we've had at ICANN is that we've always started with use cases or needs of third-party actors to get data from a system that is really between the registrant, the registrar, the registry, and ICANN. And because we're a multi-stakeholder organization, I would argue that any stakeholder at the table feels they have the right to put their demands on the table. That's not what happens under data protection law in countries. You don't, the third parties don't go, well, I want to see that too. Imagine that in the banking context, where every retailer would want to know whether your check is going to be good or whether there's a problem with your credit card. They don't get that because we have banking privacy. Now, I realize it's not as sensitive here. Same thing with medical data. But still, the principle remains that there's no fundamental public interest in exposing the information of registrants, and that produces a risk. And this frustrates us enormously because we do have data security experts in our groups, and there's never an admission that exposing the information of a woman, her address, her phone number, her basement operation where she's running a small business, there's never a recognition that that exposes her to threat, to spam, to harassment, to, you know, stalking. Possible physical damage, stalking. We, during the privacy proxy effort a couple of years ago where we were accrediting the privacy proxy services, the registrars did a very quick survey of their members. We got 20,000 submissions, and NCSG did a massive effort looking at the comments on these, and we gathered up all of the comments from... There were a lot of women who were being stalked after the doxing scandal with the Gamergate. So, we had real evidence, if somewhat qualitative. It's not a good quantitative survey, but we've never really done enough research on the damage that comes from exposure of the data. That enough Thank on you. That yes. on purpose?
I have to add, we also hope for more attention to privacy and data protection in GAC, and we would like to continue this conversation with GAC about privacy issues in HOIS. Thank you.
Thank you, Farzi, and thanks, Stephanie. And I think maybe we can pause here for any questions or remarks, and then we can proceed. So, Nui, please, Parth. Yes. Go ahead.
So now the mic is working. Hi, welcome. My name is Pablo Magek, representative of government of Niue. You said something here about law enforcement getting information, financial information. I didn't really get that because they don't get the financial information.
It's our understanding that when they're doing major criminal investigations, the data that is really interesting is the financial data, the IP address, the banking stuff. That is obviously not in the WHOIS. I should say that we don't look at WHOIS. WHOIS is the disclosure instrument. It is where the focus has been at ICANN, but we look at the entire ecosystem. So that data is collected by the registrars. They go to the WHOIS to find out who the registrar is. If they can do that through the reseller system, we would argue that the reseller system needs to be more transparent so you can find the registrar easily. But then at that point, they're looking for the deeper financial data, right? And that's how they detect the crime. So that's what I mean. Never has there been a discussion of the financial data being released.
But that is in a broader investigation. It's not through ICANN or WHOIS.
Right. But here's another problem that we find, and hopefully this will come with a greater transparency that we're seeing in the analysis here, is we hear about the law enforcement ask, and we are aware of the 2007 documents after the Octopus Conference where they have given us lists of everything that's needed. But if you put that in a tiered access system, you'll find that, you know, the preliminary level that will help law enforcement get to what they need is pretty easy, I would say. It's the deeper levels where they already get it by going to the registrar. And we do not have evidence that registrars are turning law enforcement away when it's a legitimate, serious investigation. They cooperate.
Yeah, they do. One more thing, if I may ask. How do you see the difference, because you mentioned this woman where you can see all her information about her small store, etc. How does that, except for the email address perhaps, how does that differ from a phone book, basically? Because the same information is in a phone book.
Yes, but depending on the country you're in, phone books are not transparent. Now, obviously, Google Maps has changed a lot, and in our country we have Canada 411. But phone books have always been an area of contention, particularly in the context of cellular phones, because of the immediacy, because of the charges. And so it's not the case that phone books are public. You can have a private number. We've always allowed private numbers. There's, you know, historically, there are huge debates at the OECD and at all of the major data protection groups on the transparency regarding phone books. And some of the early opinions that were given by the Article 29 group were exactly on this subject of the reverse directory. I know in our country, law enforcement tried for about at least 10 years to get access to cellular details. And, you know, when these get back up to the courts, the courts are frequently finding that this is too intrusive to make it public.
Yeah, well, it's like you say, it differs from country to country, but from Sweden, for example, everything is transparent when it comes to these details, so the police yes. are allowed to go in and look at the masts and everything to see the data afterwards. But it differs, yes, but I just wanted to hear your opinion. I know that there are great differences, yeah.
So thank you, Per, and thank you, Stephanie. So any further questions from GAC colleagues? So, yeah, CTU, please, go ahead.
Good morning. Nigel Casimir from the CTU, Caribbean Telecommunications Union. You drew an example of the woman doing business from her basement kind of thing and what the public interest is in knowing her address or whatever. But I ask the question, if she's doing business and maybe selling a product or service to the public, is it not in the public interest for someone to be able to know who they are dealing with, who they're doing business with?
It's our view that this is an area where governments should regulate. The European Union has regulated and made it mandatory that if you're conducting electronic commerce, that you have to have the data about who you are and your establishment up on the website. We think that's the appropriate approach. ICANN is not supposed to be dabbling in content. What you're actually doing with your domain name is none of ICANN's business, except insofar as we're talking about trademark issues. So we really would like to draw that bright line. Now, with respect to women having a home business or selling quilts, there is this immediate sort of elision that if you have something on a website, that means you're doing electronic commerce. It's not the case. You might be it's just like a sign. It's like an advertisement. So let's say my favorite example was always Steph's homemade quilts back when I was in data protection and government. If I'm running that for my business, I'm not shipping quilts out over the internet. I'm not selling over the internet. I'm saying, hey, I'm going to be at this quilt fair next month. That's not electronic commerce. That's speech. And it differs, again, if we differ on phone books, the differences between jurisdictions in how we regulate commerce in countries is massive. I know Canada is a really great example because we've got 14 provinces, and that is a provincial jurisdiction regulating commerce. So, you know, it's not for the federal government to try to harmonize that, trust me. So it's the same in all countries. You could be a sole proprietor. You don't have to list as a business to be a sole proprietor in Canada. You can incorporate. Now, incorporation, that's obviously very different, and that's where regulations that are coming at the federal level should come in here and kick in. I think, actually, sometimes there's a feeling that the civil society is in contention with GAC. No, actually, we would like you to act in your powers and do your thing, and that certainly, in this context, figuring out e-commerce is over to you governments, and figuring out police forces over, and by police forces, that goes down to the dog catchers, because as we know, there could be kennels doing business where the seizure of animals belongs to the dog catcher or the humane society. This is an area where you have the expertise in your jurisdictions. And the massive differences in each jurisdiction, we think that still belongs to governments. Thanks. Did that answer your question? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. And yeah, this is a topic of interest to everyone. We've been discussing this as well. And regarding the accreditation, the GAC is willing to provide advice or play a facilitation role rather than getting into the day-to-day operation thing. And we are having this discussion also with the board, and it's an open meeting, so you're most welcome to attend as well. So moving, is it Casey now, please? Yes.
Thank you, Manon. My name is Kathy Kleiman, and I'm very pleased to be with you. I go back to the beginning of the non-commercial stakeholder group, and in fact, I go back to the beginning of ICANN. So if you have questions about history, I'm happy to answer them. I've been asked to present the non-commercial stakeholder group's view on domain names and free expression. And what the non-commercial stakeholder group has advocated is that domain names belong to everyone, and that domain names are used for our most valuable speech and expression. We use them for government speech. We use them for educational speech, university speech, research speech, personal speech, political speech, and, of course, commercial speech. We use them in our organizations. So our members in the non-commercial stakeholder group use domain names to post information about their ethnic work, their religious work, their gender work, their consumer work. And it's the ideas and the communication that are being reached out across the internet from the organizations using domain names. So a non-commercial stakeholder group also believes that there's a right to use dictionary words and domain and names in domain names. So if you think of words like sun, apple, orange, tide, Smith, Wendy, even McDonald, these are common names, common terms, well-known trademarks. So non-commercial stakeholder group has worked for fair and balanced policies in ICANN that create fair rules for domain name allocation for all of the commercial and non-commercial expression, fair rules for allocation of domain names and for takedown of domain names that protect both non-commercial rights, human rights, free expression, and trademark rights. So we invite discussion with you on these topics. I am co-chair of a group called the Rights Protection Mechanisms Policy Development Process Working Group. This is one of the three big PDPs you've heard about in the GNSO, making rules for the new generic top-level domains as well as the existing generic top-level domains. A number of people in the working group are here. I'd like you to raise your hand. Everyone in the working group. So you can see that there are people here to talk to if you'd like to talk about this PDP. We'd like to talk with you more about fair and balanced policies, protection of rights protection mechanism, and non-commercial free expression. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Katie. So any questions or comments? Yes, please. And please introduce yourself. Thank you.
My name is Per-Åke Wexell. I'm from the Swedish National Police. I'm representing also Europol, fighting against child rape, child sexual abuse, and child sexual exploitation. I have a question for Katie. I visited your meeting yesterday, and I heard your views, and I'd like to have your views on domains used by perpetrators and taking account that it's used to have sexual interest in kids. Is this a freedom of speech?
First, thank you. Thank you for coming to the meetings of the GNSO, and it's good to see you again. We hope that more members of the GAC will come to meetings of the GNSO. If the speech is illegal, it's illegal. Take it down. That's not freedom of expression. Thanks.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Susan Payne. I'm not a member of the GAC. I hope it's okay to ask a question since I'm here. I was wondering if you could explain, Cathy, to the governments who are here, why you think it's appropriate for ICANN to be the venue to litigate or question norms of international trademark law, why you think this is the appropriate venue for that conversation to take place.
Susan, could you identify where you're from, please?
Identify where I'm from? Yeah, I'm an IP lawyer. I'm from London. I work for a company called Validus and Cum Laude. We're a registrar and a domain name consultancy.
Thank you. As I mentioned, I go back to the beginning, the founding of ICANN. And you probably know the history that the Department of Commerce put out two papers, two RFPs, and I know we go into the welcome ceremony any moment now, so we can come back and talk about this further, the green paper and then the white paper. And the white paper became the principles of ICANN. And from the beginning, there was the tension of trademark rights and free expression, a tension that exists in all of our national laws as privacy and law enforcement exists in all of our national laws. And that tension was built into the founding principles of ICANN. And so we are here continuing that and continuing the question of what is a domain name and how to create fair and balanced principles around the allocation and takedown of domain names. Thank you.
Thank you. So, yeah, we need to be going to the opening now. So, do you want any closing remarks, anything at all before we close? Yes, Farzi, please go ahead.
I just wanted to, I know this is complicated and the last bit of the session, but one of the things that we've been discussing is the jurisdiction group recommendations. And these recommendations help access to DNS for sanctioned countries. And we see that the board of ICANN has not been really supportive in its comments to adopt these recommendations. So I do ask GAC to reconsider and consider actually endorsing this recommendation by the group. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Farzana. Thanks, Katie, and thanks, Stephanie. Thank you very much, and thanks to the non-commercial stakeholder group for reaching out to the governments. So thank you, everyone. This concludes our meeting with the non-commercial stakeholders group. We are now moving to the opening. We have cross-community sessions all the day and the gala, and we're reconvening here tomorrow at 8:30. Thank you.